This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Being more present and aware as a salesperson is essential to connecting better with customers, but it's also essential to connecting more with yourself and managing your emotions and stress. Being more closely tied to your thoughts and emotions will help you be a better and more resilient salesperson, leader, colleague, and just a happier overall person. But for those of us less familiar, what does the idea of improving mindfulness even mean? And what does it look like in practice? With me today on Mental Selling is Emma Traharn, the founder and director of Nuvia Life, where she works with busy professionals to help them reclaim, redefine, and restore their mental, emotional, and physical health to improve their life, live in a space of more peace and calm, and recover from burnout. And she's also a former salesperson and sales training leader herself. Thanks so much for joining us today on Mental Selling. It's a noisy world out there, and we all want to be calmer and more present and more in control of our days and our emotional responses to things that come at us. So I think having you break down what this all means and what we can do about it will be hugely helpful for the listeners.
Good. No, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here actually and just share my experience of mindfulness and also how it can benefit everyone so much in their roles, in their life, and really shift how they're feeling in the present moment.
So let's start here, which is a rather broad question, but what is mindfulness exactly in the context of sales, both for themselves as salespeople and maybe also in relation to the customers that they're working with? And why is it so important today?
Okay, so good question. And let's just start by defining mindfulness and understanding that mindfulness as we know it in our culture in the West has really been sort of brought to our attention over the last number of decades by people like Jon Kabat-Zinn and Rick Hansen and various other wonderful scientists, doctors, and teachers. And so they've taken the Buddhist tradition of mindfulness practices and they've brought it in for us. And these traditions are really powerful in helping us be in the present moment without judgment. So that's really, I guess, how you could define mindfulness. It's about being in the present moment, being aware of what's going on around you, and understanding what's happening in the present moment without judgment. And then I would add, so that you can make choices and decisions from that space. And I think if we understand mindset as a concept, that's one thing. But then the important thing for us to understand is how it is really helpful for us as salespeople in our everyday work, in our everyday life and our everyday experiences. For example, it could help us to recognize our feelings and respond more effectively, again, in the moment. And I pulled up some data that says 74% of employees within corporate sales businesses are experiencing an energy crisis, and that's from the Energy Project. And 87% of employees are disengaged from work and from life, and that's from Gallup. And when I read those, it sort of linked why mindfulness is so important. So if we are experiencing an energy crisis, so that's depletion of our energy, how can we become more engaged in our life again? What do we need to do to become more engaged in our everyday experiences? And then also being mindful at work. As a sales professional, you know that you have to work with customers, you have to talk with customers, we're prospecting, we're trying to understand and engage in what the customer needs, we're juggling and managing lots of different accounts. There's a lot of external and internal pressure on the salesperson and on the sales leader. And so how can we be mindful about what's going on, make better decisions for ourselves, and also be in a space to really be the best versions of ourselves every day, bring our best energy into our lives, and also be in a space to be present with the customer, to really understand what the customer needs, and to keep going, to keep finding that motivation. So that's how it then becomes important in the workplace. And what I love teaching, what I love speaking about, is how mindfulness directly adapts how our brain works. So we can actually shift how our brain thinks and acts and the choices we make through mindfulness practices.
And when you talk about working with customers, obviously, the customers can pick up on that, right? Whether you're bringing your full energy, whether you're truly present in the conversation. And we talk a lot about how salespeople need to be active, really good listeners, and actually be focused and attentive on what people are saying back to them, right? Not just asking a question for purpose of moving on to the next question.
And I think there's that thing as a salesperson of, you know, wanting to share your knowledge and make assumptions perhaps of what customers need and want, because we've got targets to hit and figures to get. Yeah. And we haven't got a lot of time to speak to people because we're going from one account to another, or, you know, we're busy, busy, busy. And so being able to be in that space to take a breath, to take a moment, not just to ask a question, but to also then effectively listen to the customer's answer and even listen to what they're not saying. So when we're mindfully present, we can sort of subconsciously connect more clearly with our customers. Most salespeople, and I wonder if anyone listening can relate to this, especially when you start as a salesperson, we're taught how to sell, we're taught about our products, and we're taught how to prospect, but we're often not taught how to listen. Mm-hmm. We often aren't given listening courses and what good listening really means. And so that's how we can relate more to our customers, with a mindful approach.
So that's a good segue. The next thing I wanted to get into, because based on your background, I wanted to talk about training in this vein. And prior to you founding the company you have now, you spent almost a decade leading sales training and development for a major global medical device company. So I'm wondering if you can talk about how that experience, what it is about that experience that taught you about what salespeople need and maybe often what they're not getting when it comes to mindfulness.
So yeah, I spent, almost a decade as a salesperson.
You were a salesperson first, right?
So I've done those hours. I've driven those miles. I've managed accounts. And then I moved into a training and development role, where I was responsible for creating and offering training for various regions around the globe. And so it was a privilege to be able to offer that training. So that was not just sales training, but it was also product training as well.
Yes.
And
two very different things, right?
Two very different things. Yeah. Yes. Now, often they're sort of lumped together,
right?
So you now know about your product, so you can go and sell it. Just go and speak to somebody and sell it to them.
Right.
But the sales training I was involved in, so I'm a Miller Heiman sales associate, as well as Integrity Sales and Integrity Solutions as well. And what I love about those two models is that it does bring mindfulness into the equation. So the buy sell process, from the customers not even knowing about who you are to our journey to buying something. So understanding how we make decisions and understanding where the customer is can only be understood when we ask the right questions and when we have the ability to be calm in the moment and be patient, which is really tricky when you've got a lot of pressure on you to sell. And what I noticed when rolling out the training is that we give our salespeople the tools and resources to be able to do it, but often then they get lost in the busy.
Yeah.
You know,
with so much coming at them, right? They get into reactive mode.
Absolutely. How do I prioritize? There's a lot of pressure in the world today as well. So what we often don't realize is we're actually coming from a space of stress. We're actually coming from a reactive space rather than a responsive space. We call it amygdala hijack. And so knowing how to do something and actually actively doing it are two different things. So that's where I noticed that the trick of it was, because when we're learning new skills, to actually integrate and embed those skills takes time and it takes the right brainwave function. And so often, if you go on a sales training course and you're there for maybe a week, 2 weeks, even 6 months, when you get into the field and you're managing your accounts or you're managing your people, that's then a different thing. That's when the knowledge comes into place. And we know that as humans, we forget up to 80% of what we learn in the first week. If we're not putting it into practice, we've lost the rest of it within 6 months. And so we're right back where we started. So
yeah, the practice is so essential to the retention and behavior change, right?
And exactly, in the integration. And so what I witnessed was, by bringing in some mindfulness practices and getting people into giving people those tools and resources to use daily, and also bringing the mindfulness practices into the training, help them to retain the knowledge and information. Because when you're in that alpha brainwave state, that's when you absorb and retain the information. When you're in the beta brainwave state, the excitable state, you're taking in the information. But to integrate it, we need to calm down. So you sort of toggle between the two. So I think that bringing in mindfulness practices really, really helps to ingrain the knowledge and information and help us make decisions every day as a salesperson as to how I'm going to approach each client. What does my day look like? How do I structure my day? How do I manage stress that's coming in? You know, those last minute phone calls, or things don't go so well, or you get some difficult news.
Yeah. So that sense of calm and presence, it's important not only in taking in the information when you're being trained on something, but then the application of it later. You need that same sense of calm and presence to actually leverage it and use it later on.
Absolutely, because you know, sitting in a classroom and, you know, perhaps you get top marks in the classroom and you've learned your product knowledge and you understand the concept of how to manage accounts or manage people, but putting it into practice obviously is complex because we're working with lots of different individuals. And so having that mindset and the skills to be present, to understand when you're being triggered or you're overwhelmed, and to have the tools and resources to bring yourself back into that calmer state of present awareness, going back to what mindfulness is, the ability to be in the present moment without judgment, that's the important thing, is so, so helpful.
And it can relate to the salesperson's ability to deal better with things like rejection, big part of the job, right? Unforeseen requests that come out of nowhere from a customer, prospect, scheduling changes, that sort of thing. It can really help them manage all of those things, right?
Absolutely. Because, you know, in sales, there's constant rejection. And even though I feel that we're expected to just be okay with that, well, that's the job, we are human. And so it does impact our thoughts and our feelings. It does impact our confidence as a salesperson. And so if we can have the tools and resources to increase our resilience, to increase our self-confidence, to be self-aware enough to know that we're not feeling good about going into a meeting, for example. And if I'm not feeling good about it, what can I do to change my physiology so that I can be in a space where I feel present and calm, where I can remember what I've got to say, where I can remember to listen? And the customer picks up on that, very much so.
Yeah.
And then that's the cycle. That's the cycle of behavior. You may have had Lee Ashton on here. I don't know if she talked about TFAR.
I think she did.
Yeah. So thoughts plus feelings equal your actions, equal your results.
Yes, that's right. I do remember that now with Lee.
So in mindfulness, we, you know, I work with that very specifically in connecting people to their thoughts, to their feelings, to reprogram and repattern their thoughts and feelings about certain circumstances or situations, so that in the moment, the actions that they take may be ones that are more helpful, and therefore the results are more fruitful, which then changes the thoughts and the feelings that they have around that circumstance or situation, which again, in turn, changes the actions they take and the results they get.
Are there any examples that might sort of articulate this for the listener? Because I think a lot of these ideas, they sound good. And I think a lot of people listening to this, their heads are nodding and they know it's important, but it can also be for an individual sort of abstract. So are there just a couple of examples of what this might look like in a salesperson's day-to-day work?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll start with the way I teach mindfulness is very practical because if it's just an abstract concept, it's of no help to me. It sounds good, but what does it actually mean? So if we understand that through mindfulness practices, and I'll talk through those in a minute, because there are lots of different mindfulness practices, we actually change the structure of the brain. So one of the adaptations of mindfulness, for example, is that the prefrontal cortex, so where we integrate experiences, where we problem solve, strategize, our emotional control, etc., actually becomes denser, it becomes more active. And the amygdala in the limbic system, which is our threat response, actually becomes less active. So it all has to go through the limbic system to the prefrontal cortex, but it actually gets through there so that in a situation where we would normally feel threatened or have a threat response, so that's a fear response, a stress response, or I'm losing my words, or I start talking really quickly, or I said something really stupid, or I didn't know what to say, or I got really angry or really agitated or anxious or cross. Instead of going into that state, we can go into the integrative state and emotionally understand, well, not feeling good in this space, what can I do about it? Stay calm. Our self-talk is more positive, is more helpful. So then let me give you a practical example. Let's talk about medical sales. So say you've gone into a hospital and you've had a meeting and you were really excited about it as a new salesperson and it had to go well and you thought it was going to go well and actually it went really badly. They didn't want to speak to you. They were too busy. Perhaps something had happened that day and you left the hospital having not even had a great conversation and you felt really deflated, really flat. Your manager calls you and asks you how it went and you have to tell them it didn't go well and they get cross with you because they're also got pressure on them and they say, why didn't it go well? Didn't you prepare? And you said, I really prepared. I knew everything. And then you've got pressure on you from your manager. You feel awful. You go home and you get stressed about it. And you just think, right, well, I'll just do better next time. Now, what's happened is that set up a stress response in the body for being rejected, for perhaps going into that particular hospital or even going to any type of meeting like that. So the next time you do that, the subconscious thoughts you might be having, so you can try and think consciously, but the subconscious thoughts you might be having might be, this isn't going to go well. You might not be aware, but your heart rate might be higher, your blood pressure might go up, you might be shaking and sweating, you might be really thirsty and clammy and lose your voice and lose your words. And it goes just as badly, even though it didn't need to. And what I mentioned there as well was the subconscious. So it's important to know that we think we're in control of what we think and do, but actually most of our thoughts and feelings are 95% a subconscious driving and motivating us. So you've had that experience. With mindfulness practices, you could perhaps go into a space using a breath technique, for example, and feel into that feeling of rejection. Oh, it doesn't feel good. So we normally push it away. I'm just going to push it away, move on to my next thing. I'll just keep busy. But those feelings, that experience that you've had, stimulated a chemical release, a neuropeptide, which will be embedded and ingrained in your behavior, in your thought process. So how can we overcome that? How can we adapt to be present and to be aware of what's influencing us? Certain breath practices, allowing ourselves to feel how we feel, noticing how we feel. Oh, I don't feel good about this meeting coming up today. Why is that? Oh, I had a bad situation last week or last time. Okay, well, what happened then? All right, that happened. Today's different. Here's what's going to happen today. And so we can retrain ourselves to soothe feelings of stress and anxiety, to increase feelings of excitement, of presence, of confidence, of awareness, of compassion. And we can go into that meeting where perhaps we would have felt overwhelmed before, even if we were telling ourselves, nope, it's okay, I feel good, I feel all right. The body might be telling us something different. And then we see the person we're meant to be speaking to. It triggers a memory in our the limbic system, and we go into threat mode.
Yeah.
So this is how mindfulness practices are really practical and really important to understand and to practice, but they don't need to be hard. They can be really simple practices.
Because it's really about, you're not eliminating those responses to things that come at you. It's more about recognizing that they're happening and recognizing where they've happened before and understanding why, and then adapting to, okay, I've been through this before, or I know what this is response or this feeling is based on, so I know better how to deal with it, right?
Yes, yes. I haven't got a magic wand, unfortunately, for everyone, but I kind of do, really, because yes, you can switch your feelings from one to another quite quickly and quite effectively. So by acknowledging, oh, I'm feeling this certain way, I'm going to change the thought, and then I'm going to notice how that other thought affects my body, and you reprogram and repattern your response to given situations and circumstances. I first worked with this with Dr. William Bloom back in, oh, dare I say it, I think it was early the 2000s, like maybe 2001. Mm-hmm. And he was teaching this process where, and I would do this with salespeople as well, where you can physiologically, mindfully prepare yourself for a situation that you find challenging.
Yeah. Put yourself in that moment, right?
That's right. Before it. Yeah. So you can sort of get used to the physiological response. And in that moment, tell yourself you're safe by breath work, by voice work, by affirmation. And then when you actually come into that circumstance, your body will have a more helpful, I always say, I don't like to use the word good or bad, you see, so a more helpful response to support you in the actions that you want to take, in what you're trying to achieve that day by speaking to your customer or speaking to your manager or speaking to one of your sales team if you are a people manager.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that I did for myself years ago in this regard. And the work that I was able to do around it, what it did was, like, just like we're talking about, it didn't eliminate those reactions to things that came up, but it helped me understand how to deal with them better, so that something that might have bothered me when it happened for 2 or 3 days, I was able to get past in 30 minutes or maybe an hour.
Oh, that's really interesting, actually. Yes. Yes.
Because so again, you can't control the response, but you can control the recognition of it and how to deal with it better versus just letting it simmer. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you've hit the nail on the head there, because letting something simmer actually only makes it bigger and more impactful, even though we think, oh, I'm just ignoring it and it's fine. So see, I'm better now. I'm fine. I've moved past it. When actually your body will let you know that you haven't, in a way that you probably weren't expecting, in a circumstance or situation that maybe really, you know, inappropriate or unhelpful. And I think with these mindfulness practices, so research will show that our emotional well-being is hugely improved through mindfulness practices. So it really does enhance your self-esteem and your self-acceptance. So that includes situations that didn't go to plan.
Yeah. And like you're saying, in the example of the medical salesperson whose meeting didn't go well, you want to be able to deal with that in the moment so that it doesn't, because you've got other calls to make the next day, right? Other meetings to have 1 and 2 days later. Mm-hmm. And you don't want that negative experience to bleed over into impacting the next one and the next one.
That's right. And you might even be going to something that next day. So how can I effectively process that situation? Or, you know, self-talk is a mindfulness tool of, okay, well, that one didn't go well. I can maybe even debrief with myself or with my manager or a colleague later. But right now I'm going into this other situation and it's a different situation. So it's having that presence of mind, and it really does help motivate the mind. You know, again, I talked about the adaptation of mindfulness on the brain, and it increases your mental strength and your focus. So you're able to focus more in the moment.
What do you say to, again, because you have experience yourself as a salesperson, as a sales training and development leader. So what do you say to salespeople and organizations that may look at this? And again, they might nod, but they view it as the dreaded quote unquote, a soft skill.
Yeah.
That they think is a nice to have. How do you help sort of link it to being important and impactful for, you know, tangible business results and initiatives that they're working on?
So if we think about how much we invest in onboarding and recruiting and training our salespeople and other areas of the company as well, I would propose that mindfulness practices are really relevant and necessary in that process and in any culture, because the investment you've made in your team actually goes further. A, the learning and retention is improved and increased. And then B, employee well-being, employee motivation, being able to come up with different ways of working, of collaborating together, we know that that's increased as well. And so I know it's been seen as a soft skill, as a nice to have, but I truly believe that it's so important. And I think we talked about that. I feel it's like intelligent selling. It's really talking about how one can get your sales team to actually work in the way that they've been trained.
Yeah, to better apply what they're learning.
Absolutely. Going back to what we were talking about before. So you're sat in a classroom, it's conceptual. You may be, you know, going out on the road with others whilst you're new learning. But when you come to do it yourself, you know, that application, a lot of people suddenly find, oh, it's a little trickier than I thought.
Yeah. And again, as you alluded to earlier, the whole employee retention aspect, which is a huge cost drain for companies when they lose, especially when they lose salespeople. And we know that sales retention turnover in sales is higher than in most other areas of the company. So if you want to positively impact that, this is one of those ways to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that, you know, sales is a high stress environment. And one of the things that I often get asked is, well, but stress is good. It motivates me. I don't want to not be stressed. That's where I want to be. And we need stress to motivate us. And that is very true to a degree. You know, when we get up in the morning, we need that boost of cortisol to get us moving. And stress can also be a motivator. Mm-hmm. One of the books I was going to recommend was Resilient by Rick Hansen, who is a fantastic lecturer and teacher. And I'm sure probably many of your listeners have heard of him. And, you know, he talks about stress as a healthy passion, but with the sympathetic nervous system being the one that motivates us, if you link it with a positive emotion, it can be healthy and helpful. But if it's linked with a negative emotion, it can be unhealthy stress, which, you know, spirals down. So I would just sort of suggest reframing how we think about stress. And how we link it to positive, helpful emotions rather than unhelpful, stressful emotions and experiences. Right.
Because you're not going to eliminate stress or stressful responses, but you can learn better ways to manage it and learn from them.
That's right.
Can you talk a little bit more about mindfulness in the context of the customer and ways to be more mindful and present with customers?
So going back to, I think, something we were talking about earlier about when you go into your sales training and you're taught how to manage accounts and you're taught how to prospect and you've got to get as many prospects as possible. And we know how that feels. But when we approach our customers from a space of mindfulness, from a space of presence, they really do notice. And I've had a lot of feedback with this. So being with your customer, listening to what they're saying, understanding what their challenges are rather than making assumptions. Most of us do make assumptions. That's human nature to make assumptions. But having the presence of mind to ask great questions and then wait for a response. And I know that this is something that Integrity Solutions trains on, but often our brains are not wired that way.
It's that idea of, depending on where you are in the sales process, how much should you be talking versus listening? And when you're asking a question, that you're sincerely and legitimately asking it for purpose of getting the answer, right? Yeah. And it can sound simple, but it's often not, right? Salespeople can, if they're not thinking in that regard, they can ask a litany of questions just for purposes of getting through them.
And aligning the buy sell process, you know, as we know, is so necessary to understand the customer journey, to, you know, where they are in their decision making process. And it may not just be linear. So we when we mindfully approach a conversation or a meeting, we can always start from that space of, let's find out where we are today, this present moment. Again, rather than bringing in assumptions of past meetings or where we're going in the future, we're right in the present moment. We can ask great questions and we can wait for the answers. The customer will feel more at ease. They'll feel more connected to you.
Yeah, they'll feel more heard.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. And we know that that's what customers want, is to feel heard. The days of pressure selling are gone.
Yeah.
I want you to really understand everyone is very busy as well. Your customer is very busy. And so if we can pick up on that, because again, mindfulness also increases our intuition and our ability to be compassionate and understand someone else's circumstance or situation, we could maybe even have presence of mind to say, would you like me to come back tomorrow? Which, as a salesperson, might be, you know, you might feel like
very counterintuitive, but
absolutely, because I want to get this done now. I want to move this on. But customers really respond to a mindful approach.
Just like you were talking about earlier, recognizing your own triggers and stresses and anxieties, you want to be able to, mindfulness, if I'm hearing you right, is also about being able to recognize it in others.
Absolutely. Yes. So being able to notice perhaps when someone is overwhelmed and stressed. Now, we do know there's a lot of research that would show with heart coherence and energetic coherence that actually, if you're coming from a space of presence and calm, your customer may actually within 30 seconds to a minute also come into that space. But if you go into a meeting or a conversation, you're feeling a bit overwhelmed and stressed, your customer's really overwhelmed and stressed, you're both coming at it with stress and overwhelm.
Yeah.
The outcome is, well, we can guess what the outcome's
going to be. Yeah, the outcome's not going to be good.
Yeah. But if you can recognize, okay, let me just calm it down a little minute. It will be unconscious for them, or maybe they'll be consciously aware of it. It depends. But if you slow your breathing, for example, they will likely slow their breathing. We know that by slowing the out-breath, we slow down the heart rate, we send a message to the brain, which tells us we're safe. So your customer may unconsciously start to feel safe and present, and they may listen to you, and you may listen to them.
the more relaxed, focused, positive, et cetera, that you are, the more that they are going to pick up on that. And it's a snowball effect, right? Yeah.
And that's actually one of the tools that, you know, that I teach, and it's not manipulative. You're actually helping the situation. So I'm going to stay calm and present here with my breath. I'm going to watch and see how they respond, because it might not be that they respond that way, but you will, you know, that would be really interesting to hear from people actually, if they try that, how that feels for them. And again, the more you do these mindfulness practices yourself, and it may just be 2 or 3 minutes a day, is really impactful. You can really change your own physiology, your own mindset, and impact and influence others in the same way.
And we've talked about some of the things that can be directly impacted by this, right? Like the effectiveness of training, the application of training, that the relationships with customers, how those can be impacted. What are some of the other obvious or maybe not so obvious risks for salespeople and the companies that they work for that don't address these things and end up having issues like burnout, lack of engagement, you know, anxiety, depression, that are all these things are very, very, unfortunately, all too common, right? So how would you articulate what the risks are for individuals and companies that sort of don't get a handle on these, on mindfulness?
Well, yes, we know that workplace stress, as I mentioned at the beginning, is really increasing. And burnout can really be defined as unmanaged workplace stress. And stress can be defined as internal or external pressure, ongoing. And so we know that days off are increasing. That's a cost to the company. And also, if you've got a workforce that is disengaged, is overwhelmed, overburdened, stressed, is coming from that threat mode, is perhaps sleep deprived, we know that we don't make great decisions from that space. We don't have conversations that are helpful. And so it leads to, I want to use the word conflict.
Yeah.
So it can lead to conflict within the culture, within the company, misunderstandings, poor judgment. I haven't got the figures on it, but making bad decisions costs company billions a year.
Yeah.
And so having a workforce that is engaged and supported and feels that they can have some sort of way of keeping their health balanced so that their stress and anxiety levels are managed is so important, because I always say that the health of your employees is the health of your company. Full stop.
Right.
That's it.
And if you're doing things like forcing your salespeople to always be on, you know, 24/7, that sort of thing, it's unsustainable.
It's unsustainable. And I think over the last 40, 50 years, maybe that's been, you've just got to keep being, the thought has been, you've just got to keep being productive. And to be productive and successful, you've just got to work 18 hours a day.
Yeah.
When in fact, research shows, and we know anecdotally, that actually you can be more productive with more focused, engaged time. A lot of time when we think we are working, we're actually not. You know, I don't want to call it time wasted, but that time could be more effectively used. And so if we can learn these skills of being focused, and mindfulness improves your focus and your concentration, you're less distracted. So we're able to focus on one thing at a time. A lot of us multitask. How many of us are sending an email, checking our phone, listening to a conversation? Perhaps the phone's ringing as well.
Yeah.
We're thinking about what we've got to do when we get home. We're thinking about that argument we have had with our spouse, or what's happening with the children or the parents. We have over 50,000 thoughts, conscious thoughts, buzzing around in our heads every day. And so when we start to bring mindfulness into the workplace, we see productivity increases, employee engagement increases.
I've seen you write about the sort of myths of multitasking, right? And what a negative it is, or what a myth it is that you actually can multitask, right?
Correct. We can do lots of different things at once, but we won't be doing it to our full potential, and we won't remember what we did and how many and how we did it. You know, how many times have you driven somewhere and not remembered how you got there? And that's how the brain works. So when we learn a skill, it embeds in our brain, and that's the pattern of movement and behavior, and we know what to do. But if we're not doing it consciously, we can't make changes.
Yeah. And if you're trying to do five things at once, are you really advancing those five things? Or are you just spinning your wheels?
Exactly. And one of the slides I use in one of my presentations is someone spinning plates. You know, that image of people spinning plates, and you're running around spinning all the plates. You're using so much energy trying to do all of these things and trying to do them all well. And we're doing them all probably okay, but also exhausting ourselves in the process. And so what if we mindfully chose to do one thing at a time, did them all really well, weren't exhausted at the end of the day, and could feel really good about the achievements we've made?
I've found that myself. It's something I've tried to be more resolved to doing is, you might have 15 things on your to-do list, but in reality, if you deal with really solving and or advancing two or three of them in a day and sort of being able to check those off versus trying to do bits and pieces of all of them at once, you feel better about yourself. You feel more accomplished.
Yes. Yeah. And our brain is more rested. We then get better sleep, and we can start the next day more mindfully, more present, and make the choices of, you know, what we're going to tackle today first. What are our priorities? When we're in that space of stress and threat and unmindful, we can't even decide what our priorities are.
Yeah. And this is also, this might be obvious, but it's not a skill that is learned where you check a box, right? And you're done with it. Like,
correct.
I've learned how to be mindful, right? Like, on to the next thing. It's something that you've got to continually work on, and a muscle you've got to continue to flex, right?
Yeah. Yes. And I'm going to use the clean version of what I talked to you about before, but it's like if you're training for a marathon, I always say you don't go out and just do one run and you're ready and you run the marathon.
Yeah.
You're training every day and you're doing different types of training. You titrate it. So you might, you know, walk and run for a bit. And then you might stretch and you might go to the gym and lift weights and you might do lots of, you know, you might do some swimming, you might do some hiking. There's other different things you do. And it's the same with our brain. If we see the brain as a muscle to be trained and engaged throughout our lives, as you would your general health, you know, we're constantly using our brain, we're constantly using our body. So we need to pay attention to it. And when we pay attention to it, it can be healthy, it can be well. And it can really be our best ally or our worst foe, depending on how we treat it.
And so going back again to your experience, both as an individual salesperson and as somebody that led sales training and development for a medical device company, how does coaching fit into how sales organizations should be thinking about and addressing mindfulness and all of the health and well-being aspects that we're talking about? What the role that coaching plays in all this?
So coaching is something I'm a real advocate for. I think coaching is really important, but coaching is also a skill, a learned skill, and it is different to managing somebody. And coaching mindfully is imperative because a good coach will be really present with their coachee, will allow them to speak, will allow them to engage, and will help to develop that person. But to be able to be in that role, you need to be somebody who's developing yourself and who can be mindfully present and aware that somebody else in the room that you're coaching may have different expectations to you, has had a different experience, may have different desires and goals to you. So you're coaching that individual to be the best that they can be. And that is different to managing. And so those two skills, again, can be learnt. So I'm a real advocate for mindful coaching and for any people managers to be as self-aware as possible and to have some sort of training and support to be a coach, because those skills of coaching are really listening skills.
Yeah.
As opposed to telling and do it this way skills.
And the coaching skills are, they're not inherent, right? Somebody that was promoted into a sales leadership role isn't inherently going to be good at coaching, nor is he or she going to even understand what coaching means, right?
Absolutely.
You've got to support that organizationally.
Yes, absolutely. So again, I'm a real advocate for having the skills taught ongoing for anyone that moves into a role where coaching is going to be necessary, because we find that, again, most people don't know what coaching is. Maybe they've not received effective coaching themselves,
right,
or they've got an assumption or a paradigm about what coaching is from past experiences. So those coaching skills are really vital in bringing your workforce through to a space of self-efficacy and self-confidence.
Mm-hmm. And we often talk about how one of the roles of coaching is for leaders to model the behaviors for their team that they want their salespeople to model with customers, right? So that certainly applies here.
Yes.
If you're mindful and present and all of those things as a leader, your team is much more likely to do that directly with customers. Is that right?
Yes. And because that it's called, you know, the shadow, or your people do model themselves unconsciously on their leaders or people that they see as leaders. And so certainly if you are a mindful leader, if you are present and aware and have conversations from a space of, again, compassion and understanding and presence. And those can be difficult conversations. I'm not saying those conversations are always lovely conversations.
Sure.
But I would also say that, you know, and encourage everyone within sales that they can be a leader themselves. We can lead ourselves. So we can look to leaders to model ourselves on. But also I would encourage everyone to really dig into what their own values are. And that can come through mindfulness practices. So who do I want to be? What do I want to be a model for in my life? We don't need to just follow the herd, you know? So mindfulness practices help you really become more familiar with who you are, your responses, what your values are, and the choices you make from that.
Yeah, that's a great example I hadn't thought of, but it's something that we teach a lot with salespeople, is about aligning values, your own core values with your behaviors. And that requires a degree of ongoing mindfulness, right? Yeah, yes. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. And also then knowing, because we can have two core values that don't always align with each other. They might butt up against each other. They might be very necessary values for us to hold, but on certain days it may be, oh, these values are sort of having a difficult conversation today, and understanding that is what's happening.
Yeah. And it also helps you with time allocation and time resourcing, and can help you with goal setting even.
Absolutely.
Getting more clarity about what your goals should be.
Yes. And I talk about, so goal setting is really important. But Sri Kumar Rao, I think I'm saying his name right. Sri, I'll have to look that up. Always talks about goal setting and intention setting. So set your goal and then forget about it. And then set your intentions daily to move towards that goal, but also having the presence of mind to enjoy the journey towards that goal, because that goal may shift and change along the way.
Right. Or it's a goal that's not going to come to fruition this week, this month.
I was going to say, and often goals are quite far in the distance. So it's being able to break it down. And I use the PACE model when I'm teaching, which is purposeful action and conscious energy, so that all of our choices align with our intentions, which align with our goals, so that we're continuously moving in that direction. And we can be in that space of presence, so it's not causing stress on the body or the mind or the brain or our responses and our actions, because we haven't achieved that goal yet. Right. You know, that goal will come, or that goal indeed may change as we move towards it. But we can then align our values, our choices, our actions with that on a daily basis. And that's, that happens by being present and revisiting and choosing how we spend our energy, which again goes back to the thing of making great choices and not multitasking and choosing our priorities.
Any other advice that you would have both for salespeople and sales leaders that are listening that want to get a better handle on this? I know you talked about the book with Rick Hansen, which I think is a good recommendation, but any other sort of final advice or recommendations you would have for people?
I think if you are interested in mindfulness, there's a lot of research now on neuroplasticity. And Dr. Andrew Huberman of the Huberman podcast, he's a researcher out of Stanford. He is fantastic at talking about these types of things and breaking them down really, really well. So do your research, listen to podcasts, and then listening to podcasts, watching things on YouTube, reading books are wonderful, but going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, that's all a concept.
Yeah.
Mindfulness and mindfulness techniques become practical when you apply them. And so find a great mindfulness teacher, or there's lots of apps that you can download, like the Calm app, the Headspace app, etc. One little caveat I will say to apps and not having a teacher is that there's also a lot of research that shows now that, you know, people can have adverse reactions to mindfulness practices. If you are doing a mindfulness practice, and I think this is important to state, and you have feelings of past experiences showing up, and you, it may not feel like a good experience to be in a mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. So reach out to a professional to help guide you through a practice that works for you, because there are a lot of different, that's why I haven't gone into specific mindfulness practices today, because there are lots of different practices that you could explore. And really just be curious. Be curious about how the brain works, how the mind works. Aim to understand your own responses. Aim to be curious about what your own responses are to workplace stress, to workplace opportunities, and become familiar with yourself. Become a friend to yourself, which again sounds like a soft thing, but it's the same as being a leader or a manager. You get to know your teams. Yeah. You get to shape them, and you get to help them and support them. And through mindfulness practices, I would really encourage people to get to know themselves so they can help themselves in the best way possible. So they can shape and support themselves. And then focus. So we've mentioned this a couple of times through our conversation. Multitasking is impossible. And so I would encourage people to find the best way for them to focus on one thing at a time, whether it's switching their phones off, if they're working on their laptop, switching their messaging systems that come up, switching off emails, setting an alarm on their phone for 20 minutes, 25 minutes. That's a great amount of time to do some work for. Yeah. And then the alarm goes off. You can stop that work and take a break. Look outside, reset yourself. It's called optic channeling. So we can just sort of rebalance our brain like that.
Yeah. I've found something simple like that. Just turning off email on your laptop for certain periods of time. It doesn't have to be half the day, but for 20, 45 minutes, whatever it might be, just that can really help you be more in the moment.
Yes. And then, as we're speaking to sales, before any meeting, take a couple of breaths. You've done your preparation, and just go into the meeting with, again, that sense of curiosity and open mind, and be as present as possible in that meeting.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Mental Selling. If you're curious to hear what we'll talk about next, stick around to listen to a sneak peek.
What I often find is there's very much in their head on these things, but they haven't seen where the person they're coaching is ignoring their advice or their guidance. They haven't gotten reports back from senior leadership that they're doing it. And then they start to realize, oh, this is really in my head. This isn't what's really happening outside of it.
Please make sure that you're subscribed. And as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.